Hello and welcome to Orange is the New Cast, the officially unofficial podcast for Netflix's Orange is the New Black podcast. I'm your host, Aaron.
And I'm Cecily.
And we are back for this podcast in particular is for episodes 401, 402, 403, Work That Body For Me, Power Suit, and Don't Say Anything that featured the awesome Say Anything reference homage.
Right.
We are back. We didn't have time to do a proper intro podcast.
Yep, we've got abbreviated coverage and abbreviated hosts covering said coverage. Yeah,
the aggressive delivery negated a lot of our normal arrangements. So it's going to be Cecily and Pialani joining me this year, and we're going to be alternating co-hosts.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to be doing three at a time and having a special finale edition for The Straggler. So
yep.
We can do finale / wrap up on the last podcast. Don't know what the release schedule is because we're kind of shotgunning it, but I'm hoping to get
you'll get it when you Tuesdays get it, you Thursdays. Savages.
But yeah, look at the feed, look at your choices. what do you think about the new season so far? Because I was kind of going into season, honestly, with all the feverish Game of Thrones stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't really anticipating it. I didn't have any feelings one way or another about it.
I'm enjoying it so far. I think it's just as action-packed as normal. There's all kinds of crazy things going on that would never happen in actual prison, I assume.
Yeah, and for whatever reason, I feel like that I'm not as willing to call bullshit on things that I don't feel like should happen in this prison anymore.
Well, I think they're putting things on the front lines that really deserve to be there. I mean, you think back in season one, and it was just Piper all day, every day.
Uh-huh.
That wasn't as good as some of these other more interesting storylines we've gotten, like Maria Ruiz's backstory.
Yeah.
Thought that was great.
Yeah, and
since we don't have that relationship anymore, it was nice to see those two again, how they first fell in love. Very cute.
And if you're... And if you're a longtime listener to our podcast, you know that we're not the biggest Piper fans. But I feel like this is where she's kind of like a C-plot through most of these, and she looks like she's on a trajectory of getting her comeuppance is fairly entertaining.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
So
what were your thoughts on so far?
I've
only watched the first three, and I'm going to try to reserve it to only watching up to where we podcast.
It's a lot easier not having to keep track of what is and isn't a spoiler when you do it that way. But I thought the first three episodes were really strong.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I didn't think there was a single part that was dumb. I thought that mixing the new prisoners who come from perhaps less, they're not the kind of minimum security prisoners that we've been accustomed to. And
yes.
Mixing some of the guards from Supermax.
Yes.
I can't remember who the big burly guy is. I'll get to his name.
Piscatella.
And that's the other thing. Like, I'm going to be struggling these names until I get kind of back in a groove. I thought Piscatella was awesome. He's, you know, I guess this year's version of Porn Stash, except for he's just...
No nonsense.
I mean, I haven't seen him be even inappropriate. He's just
from Max. But
I thought he was going to be brutalizing people left, right, and center. I'm not getting that. I'm getting that he's just very tough and professional, and he demands order.
Well, we're only three episodes in.
Yes,
so.
True. That's true.
You know, introduce a guy like that without conflict coming with it.
But I'm reminded, like, my favorite moment of his is when he is introducing the new guards and their living arrangements, and he's like, the warden has asked me to do initiate an icebreaker procedure, so you will tell me two truths and one lie, and I will attempt to discern the lie.
And he's getting closer and closer to that woman's face.
It's so funny, because it's doing the opposite. It is not breaking any kind of ice.
No.
I thought it's a really strong opening. So we'll see where it goes. I mean, I was at one point even starting to like So-So, which has never happened before.
Right. Going into this, I don't know even if it exists out there, but we desperately tried to watch the last season on to get kind of a quick refresher. But we did end up watching this season on.
Mm-hmm.
And the trailer looks hot.
Yeah.
Looks scary, intense, and
mm-hmm.
and I'm excited to see everything that happens. But let's talk about what did happen these episodes.
Yeah. So let's. I'm just going to start stuff kind of in order, and we'll talk about their character arcs. Let's talk about
the man
who is the beer can.
Caputo.
Basis for side boob, Caputo. He's the warden now, and I liked how he kind of realizes. You know, we return to the show immediately from where we left it. The women are still frolicking in the probable toxic runoff lake.
Yes.
Which didn't really become a big, like, when they're all breaking out in rashes, I thought that there was going to be...
I feel like something more has got to happen.
I don't know, because it's been a long while now.
Has it? I mean, in real time, it feels like it's been, like, 2 days.
What do you think about Caputo's... I mean, yeah, you could be right, but I'm saying, like, if there's going to be a mass outbreak of rashes, there's been at least, we've been through at least 3 nights, because that's how many nights that Red's put up at the Snorer.
Okay, you're
so
right.
So I was like, I feel like if it's going to be a mass run on Coochie Cream or whatever, you would have had that by now. But what do you think about Caputo and his arc and some of the interactions, especially the one I want to talk about is the one where he meets Donaldson, who was... he was the inspiration for Admiral
Rod Cocker. Yeah.
And they run into him at like an Applebee's or at a
Olive
Garden class establishment.
Right. He's just a busboy. Up front, I just want to say that yet again, we got another a couple of scenes of Caputo just being an absolute creep. But at the same time, it's okay. Like, for instance, he's got Maureen in his office and she's just looking at what's on the screen and it happens to be porn.
Mm-hmm.
And when they asked how he chose Tasty as his assistant, he said, she's the one that I'm least semi-attracted to, which tells me he's attracted to every woman that's in the prison because they're all women. But he's making smart choices with his creepiness. So as not to let it affect the women around him.
Yeah, we talked about it. It's like he's kind of a creep and kind of a pervert, but he understands this about himself and understands it's not appropriate to push this creepiness and perversity onto his female charges.
Right.
So, like, maybe he jerks off in the office.
But he's not jerking off on to an inmate. No.
Or having sex, like, you know.
Having sex or just being, yeah.
Yeah, he's got a porn stash in it. A fairly self-aware guy. Let's talk about this thing with Donald. Because I thought it was interesting how, at first, Caputo felt sorry for him and tried to give him the $20. And then Donaldson comes storming out and says,
Well, it seems like Linda talked him into the reasons not to feel guilty first.
Yeah. But that's what I'm trying to get at. Like, so he gives he said, look, I don't want you, you know... You left us all high and dry. O'Neill had a kidney stone, I think, and he didn't have insurance, so he put off putting it treated, and now he's got a burst, I think, kidney or something like that, and he might die, and Caputo's, like, you know, exorbitating all these shots, and then Caputo says, well, you know what? You on the worst day in prison history, when the inmates were out and we're getting a flood of new inmates... You know, you guys didn't answer the bell, and it's been hell, and I was going to make you, like, head CO or whatever the...
Captain of the Guard.
Yeah, yeah.
What Piscatella is now.
Yeah, the Castilian, if you will.
I will.
But yeah, I was going to make you that, but I'm glad that I found out that you were kind of unreliable. I'm glad you spared me, or I'm glad I dodged that bullet. It's one of those situations where... I'm not sure how to feel, because everything that Donaldson said is true, and everything that Caputo said is true as well, and I guess which side you come down on is whether you think Caputo could really effectively lobby for these people to have more pay and benefits, because judging from the corporate scenes that I've seen so far of him participating in, I don't think that's the case at all. I think that he would have been co-opted by the system and their attaboys and brownie points and expensive suits and hot middle-aged executives, and he would have been less and less engaged with the workers.
I don't think that's true. I mean, Caputo was almost
directly... It's already happened.
Right, because they walked out, but Caputo did help them unionize, right?
Sure.
So he's a fan of the little man, and he wants to help them out. But now that he's warden, who knows what he could have done with that power if they had all stuck around.
I wish Donaldson had thrown that into his face. Like, you helped us organize. You're the one that talked us into doing the thing. Yeah.
Oh, man. Can you imagine what Linda would have done with that information?
Ooh.
He could have gotten in some serious trouble.
Well, yeah, who knows. But I thought that would have... I felt like that... They let Caputo do that thing where Donaldson was made speechless, and I don't know that that's exactly how that... Or maybe it was. Maybe Donaldson's like, well, I'm classier than this. I'm not going to be the guy who's going to argue, you know, with a customer.
Right.
And
also,
this...
I do need that $20.
Sure, sure. So I don't know. I'm not sure what to think about Caputo, because he does seem successful. There's interesting, to replace these COs, apparently they want to get veterans, which started out like a solid, like, seems like a suggestion. Like, hey, yeah, let's get jobs for veterans and, you know, whatnot. And then it turns into, like, well, it's a pure profit motive. Oh, yeah, we can get a couple $1,000 in grants if we take these, and more if they're in wheelchairs and crutches.
Yeah.
Which, you know, of course, he tries to point that might negatively affect their job performance.
Right, and house them on campus. I mean, they're on a roll.
Yeah.
The other thing about Caputo in these episodes is he gets Tasty to be his assistant.
Yep.
So we're going to be seeing, I assume, a lot more inmates doing other regular jobs.
Well,
or just more inmates cleaning porta pots, because that's the worst thing ever.
And I love, oh God, the fact that they're easing this overcrowding burden with porta pots, like, is just indicative. And there's also, like, all these funny things happening in the margins where Tasty's like, oh, for Christ's sake, I'm going to clean porta pots. And Suzanne's like, yes, because she loves the clean, apparently really disgusting, gross things.
Yeah.
Maybe cleaning just, like, all the smooth plastic is going to be soothing to her. I don't know. but I hope that, and I love the Shawshank reference when she's like, look, you know, I don't want to be getting up in your social security number and knowing your taxes and then end up having, I ain't going to crawl through a river of shit to get out of this place. What else do we want to talk about with Caputo?
That's about all I've got.
Maybe some other stuff will come up in it. I want to talk about the theme about overcrowding in general, because... Okay. You know, like, I've considered myself fairly informed about what's going on in privatized prisons and their awfulness and whatnot, but I felt like that this is doing a good job of showing that, you know, it's not, overcrowding's not just like a nuisance, like, oh my God, these guys are going to have to share spaces and they're going to have to bunk beds and all that. It's not like a, you know, Girl Scout camp type complaint. This is putting people on top of each other and putting them in stressful positions and changing the dynamics of the groups and whatnot is dangerous. And we're seeing this where, you know, you've got this influx of maybe a more dangerous type of prisoner that they've actually got more violent. Because it seems like the only really violent offenders at this prison are the old women who have been put into the minimum security because they're just considered no longer able to be a threat. Although, you know, the one that I call the pirate lady who's got the squid tattoo in her chest.
Yeah.
She does seem like she's still dangerous.
She absolutely is. She was ready to cut up a body without any prompting.
Right. But they
probably didn't even need to ask her to help, and she would have.
Yeah, I thought there was, you know, there's the overcrowding versus, as Big Boo said, a mandala of pussy. But you've also got all the, you know, the bathroom fights and the fact that, you know, Red has to get up at 3 o'clock in the morning instead of 4:30 to cook for everybody
down the stairs.
And they're running out of toast. And yeah, there's already not enough COs, and now there's twice as many prisoners. So you've got places where women are able to jump other women. Like, for the first time, like, I've always joked, like, oh, you know, I wonder when this show's going to start becoming Oz, but this season feels like it's the one. You know, I know we had the season before last where V kind of took over and instituted some violence and beat the shit out of Poussey. Well, no, actually, she had Suzanne beat the shit out of Poussey. But I thought it's interesting that we've got a fake CO, murdered, chopped up in little pieces and planted in the garden.
Great way to kill a body.
We've had multiple women getting beat down. Yeah. Litchfield is getting to be a scarier place for these women.
Yeah, absolutely is.
Do we want to talk about, since we're talking about chopping up people, Lolly and Alex's storyline?
Yes.
Because this is interesting. You've got, like, it's essentially the Telltale Heart, only with a person who's got mental problems.
Right. It's just the worst accomplice ever. And you're right. I forget her name, but Squid Tattoo Pirate Lady suggests that they kill Lolly because she just can't keep it together. And now there's drones flying around.
Which I think we're going to find out those drones are a cost-saving measure to expand the policing without actually having more COs.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But
that's
for
Lolly,
this is like, you know...
The NSA is after you. This is definitive proof in her mind.
This is proof of the end times as far as she's
You just
concerned.
Killed a guy, now there's a drone? What
right.
a coincidence.
And it seems like it's fixated on me, yeah. and she's already paranoid, and...
So, yeah, she's going to either snap or they're going to have to kill her, right?
Well, it's funny because any other season, I would have thought that that was kind of like a joke. Yeah. We're going to have to kill her, but I don't know.
And they
like,
play it as a joke, too.
But I also think there's enough truth to that that...
That
and they've got... Like, that's the other thing. It's like it's the thing that blends into here is, you know, Miss King's involvement in the garden. And, like,
oh,
what's going to happen when they dig up those plants when it comes time to harvest and there's a fucking human skull?
Oh, you don't dig out the entire plant.
I know, but I'm saying, like, next year, if you when they're tilling someone...
Well, how long does it take to dispose in the ground, or decompose in the ground?
I feel like skulls can hang around for years.
Did they put the skull in there?
Because I know, like, I remember there was this thing of, like,
Well,
they,
by that time, who...
They planted this big elm tree over, like, a Civil War
yeah.
field or something, and they blew over, like, 150 years later, and there were still, like, skulls and bones in the root systems and stuff, or these soldiers that died.
Yeah.
I mean, just saying, like, a bone can last a good long while.
Okay, so let's say that happens. Who cares? Nobody's going to be able to trace that back to anybody.
Well, but
it's been a year, and it's just bones.
Yeah, and I guess that's the thing.
And he's an anonymous hitman.
Well, that's the thing is, I thought last year that he had actually gotten into the prison, like he had actually filled out paperwork and gotten hired, but it seems the way they're presenting
it. But still,
he shouldn't have
any connection to Alex if he's...
I know, but I'm saying like... It seems like this year they've made it a point to where he's just snuck in with a uniform and a fake badge and took advantage of the chaos because they don't have any... They're not looking for a missing guard, which was... The first few episodes, I was like, I wonder when they're going to figure out that there's a guard that's missing and they're going to turn everything upside down.
Or is the overcrowding just so bad that no one's had time to notice?
But where I was going is if someone finds this skull, even though they can't pin it to anyone, I think that's going to have a repercussion on the prison ecosystem. Like, someone got killed, we'll be able to forensically determine about where.
Yeah.
We can probably pull the dental records and find out this guy is some drug cartel assassin, because
right.
I'm sure he's wanted for something. There's Interpol, and like that will... I don't know. Maybe turn Litchfield from minimum to max. I don't know where they're... I don't know what direction they're actually trying to steer the story into.
I didn't think they thought that far ahead.
Well, probably not, but that's not stopping me from doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So what else do we want to talk about with Alex and Lolly? I feel like that's... I mean,
Alex
and Piper really haven't had much to do with anything.
Yeah, Alex has a cell phone now.
Yep.
So there's that thing.
That's the other thing is
she
like...
She lost her keys in the trade.
Here's the other thing is there's no way that her former drug dealer boss is going to forget about her because eventually he'll find out that this guy's going missing.
Right.
And Alex is still alive.
And
there'll be another...
Well, they did send pictures of her looking dead and her tits.
Sure.
So I would think that was pretty good proof that he did the thing, because who would be stupid enough to do that?
I agree, but
right?
Then when this guy doesn't show up ever again and never answers his phone again,
right.
Or
who knows what he did after he left the prison?
Well, but don't you think they're gonna... I mean, I thought this guy was... I mean, Alex knew this guy. This was their regular hitman.
Did she?
Yeah. They established that he had showed up to kill her other associate right in front of her before.
Oh.
I thought it was the same guy. I might be wrong, but I'm pretty sure that it is, and I feel like that's another, like, she's worried about the present, but they haven't even voiced a concern of, like, this isn't probably the last time that I'm going to have to do something like this, or what is, you know, I bought myself time, but it doesn't seem like it's a permanent solution. Maybe it's intended to be, I don't know.
But that's all I have on them. What do you...
You want to talk about Suzanne and Maureen? Because, honestly, I was so...
Yeah.
kind of excited about their relationship.
Yeah, last episode they had Maureen opening up Suzanne to the idea of having a relationship and letting someone in, and
yeah,
it was very sweet. And then they just dashed it away immediately.
Yeah, because
is that what Kelly referred to last year as a character assassination, or is that the word for it?
Well, I don't know, because it's essentially Jinji Cohen's thing where she makes someone to be the worst, and then she redeems them, and then they're the worst again.
And it's happening to almost every one of these people.
And then, like, after a couple of seasons, you never know, like, how do I feel about this person? Because on the one hand, they did this, this, and this, but on the other hand, they also did this, this, and this. Like,
it's a pretty accurate depiction of real human beings.
Well, I don't know, because most people, I think, are much more even-keeled, middle of the road. They haven't murdered anybody, but also run an orphanage, you know? It's like, that's...
Well, I mean, sure, outside of a prison.
Yeah, that's the thing, putting in prison at almost, like, maybe she's fumbled in, or she stumbled into a storytelling device that stuff kind of makes sense. Like, yes, this person could
like,
be...
Yeah, like, for this in a prison, and also on the show Weeds, where you're just dealing with a bunch of drug dealers, that same sort of formula works.
Okay. So, what were we talking about? Suzanne and Maureen, rather. I don't know how I felt, because I guess I was more excited for Suzanne to try to get a unconventional but healthy relationship going with someone, rather than having, you know, kind of a one-sided, unrequited love or being nakedly taken advantage of. But she fell in, you know, she started to fall for someone who has got really severe mental problems.
Right, and she's done something really bad. From the way Joe Caputo looked at her file.
That's the other thing. What are we going to do about Maureen? And he kind of raises his eyebrows about whatever her record is. And they're not going to tell us.
No.
So what the fuck is going on with her?
Yeah. Seems like Jinji Cohen may have figured out something better for either Suzanne or Maureen this year. But we're going to get more.
Okay. Do you, I want to talk about Morello and her wedding to the man-child, and how kind of like, I've always liked her, even though she's clearly a nutter.
Oh, yeah. But
and that's
she's
the thing,
adorable
like,
about it.
I know, it's like, that's the interesting thing, because like, I really liked her last season, and I like her love affair with the pen pal, but then she also got, them to just beat the shit out of her the real victim.
Christopher.
Now she's in love with this guy, and they're having hot phone sex. He turned out that he's living with his mom, and I think sleeping in the same room with his little brother, so that's not even actually working that well.
Yeah.
I especially liked the part where she's trying to get everyone jazzed and jealous about the fact that she's married and she had sex with a man, and there's been so much turmoil, and the thing with the lake, and the thing with, you know... Alex doesn't want to give a shit because she's murdered a dude and then cut him up.
I also think that there's...
Which we didn't talk about the fact that it was kind of a double murder. Lawless came in and stumped him.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, this guy's not going to be dead. He's still going to be alive. And she had to re-kill him.
Yeah, yeah. We were expecting him to just be completely gone when she came back at night.
But it was kind of a Saving Private Ryan style. Like, look right into his eyes while you're strangling him.
Spoiler alert.
Well, if you haven't seen Saving Private Ryan yet.
I haven't.
Oh, I don't think you take it. But,
the double murder.
But, yeah, the fact that Morello's trying to get everybody kind of jealous or excited, and it's
her
day, and no
is...
one wants to talk about it when it's her day, and she's
I think
to
everyone
take...
just is jealous, and I think that they have a lot of fun just putting her on,
pretending
not to be interested, because when someone does actually rain on her parade, she gets all the sympathies.
Hmm. So I don't know how to feel about her character. Then they do this like super uncomfortable but very funny no hands, no touching.
What do you call that?
Table sex?
Visitation sex?
Visitation sex, yeah.
Yeah, and the guard doesn't even know how to stop it, or I don't even think it occurs to him to stop it because he's enjoying watching.
Yeah.
There's children in the room.
That's the thing.
So
like,
funny.
If it wasn't for the fact that the kids were in the room, I guess I wouldn't care that much.
Right.
But like, oh, man, it's gross. It's gross.
Yeah.
So he comes in his pants and she probably comes in her pants, and I guess they can keep doing that.
Yeah.
Can they just get conjugals up in this piece? I know they got it the one time, but
I mean, when it's in minimum security, I'm pretty sure you just have like short-ish sentences.
Huh.
But they do have
Some of these people are put away for a long time, though.
They do have trailers for Conjugals, right?
I don't know. I don't know. And I'm sure someone will give us the scoop on that. But I know that some prisons do and some of them don't. And I don't know how this one goes. It does seem like it is, you know, I don't know how long Morello's sentence is. But it does seem like it'd be very hard to get married while you're in prison and then remain chaste to your mate for 5 years and not be able to.
Is that how long she has left?
I don't know. I'm just throwing that as an example. I remember.
Oh, yeah, no.
I remember the girls were talking about the years that she had left and like whether you think, because she's going on about, oh, I think it's so sweet that I've got his penis locked down and like a.
Oh, yeah.
But like, and the girls were like, I don't know. You're in here for a couple of years. Like, you don't think that he's going to want to keep his salami warm in some other person's bun or whatever. I can't remember.
Whatever
the,
you do with salami.
The euphemism. Yeah. Something. I don't know. I also like, because there's a lot of this table talking scenes where they're all in the lunchroom. I like the fact that So-So's kind of settled with the black women.
Yeah.
And that, who was trying to instigate the race war?
Oh, it was, God, what's her name? Poofy Hair.
Yeah, Black Cindy.
Black Cindy.
Who is now completely mazel tov, and she's like squared off with the one Muslim they've got in the prison too. But I thought that was pretty funny how that they were, you know, she's like, oh, I'm sorry, did I trigger you? What? And tried to, and what was it? Tasty said, I'm just bored, I'd like to see a race war or something like that.
No, Black Cindy said
that. Oh, she's
that.
The one? Okay. Yeah. Who was the one getting all pissed about it?
Oh,
then?
It was the runner, yeah.
The runner. Yeah, so that's kind of funny and interesting.
Hilarious.
What else do we want to talk about? Do we want to talk about, Piper's plotline? How she's wants everyone to know how badass she is for sending the kangaroo lady to Max.
Well, I feel like a few people have given her the idea that she's a badass.
Well,
because that was a really cold thing that she did.
But she also, it's straight up snitching, right? I mean, it's a combination of, like, planting.
I don't think so.
Huh.
I mean, that's not planting evidence and getting her thrown in Max.
I guess that's
not
true.
A snitch thing to
do.
It's just a dick thing to do.
Yeah, I guess it's true.
And I don't think that kind of behavior gets you more friends. It just gets distance from everyone else.
Yeah.
Because they don't want shit planted on them eventually.
But Piper's got this reputation for being cold like a bomb pop from way back in the freezer amongst the Litchfield minimum security women.
Yeah.
But it seems like the more violent and dangerous offenders don't give a shit. And they're like calling,
like
you know.
Who?
Huh?
Like who? Violent offenders don't give a shit.
Like the Dominican women that have essentially started moving in on her panty turf.
Oh, is that what they're doing?
Well, I mean, I just felt like that was shown like when the new women were all like kind of locked up in a cage and the old women are, you know, the previous season's women are kind of milling about in the cafeteria and Flocka goes over and she's like, oh, I see you got a teardrop in your eye. And Flocka's like, well, that's this makeup. Goes, well, mine's not. And I got three of them. I killed three people and I got sent up on wick fraud, which... I guess if she really got in jail for wick fraud, then I don't know that she's considered a violent offender, but she says she's killed three people, and that's one of the women that's at the core of the Dominican gang now.
Yeah.
So, like, and then, you know, that's the thing, like, Piper is so self-conscious about being this godfather figure, and she's, like, posing and posturing, and she got this, you know, the quote-unquote heavy, the Samoan girl.
Well, here's what confused me, is that these Dominican women are throwing in with, like, Flocka and Gloria and all the women that we've already known before.
Are they?
And Maria.
Because
specifically.
It seems like...
But Maria brought Piper a crop of new women to get in on the panty game.
Yeah.
So that's what confused me, is, like, they're throwing in with them... She's following Piper around for some reason, but...
Well, it feels like it's the Dominicans that are organized, you know, kind of organizing the crime in the prison, and the rest of the Latinas are kind of that rising tide's making their boat float higher, too, but there's not...
Oh, yeah, there is some internal conflict in the kitchen.
Yeah, and that, I thought that was pretty funny, too, how the fact it's like, you know, everyone treats us like we're one kind of unit, but we all know that, like, Puerto Ricans talk shit about Dominicans, and... Dominicans talk shit about Haitians,
and then they talk
everyone
about...
talks shit about Cubans, and like it's all these different stereotypes, even amongst their own people.
Right.
And I see, that's the thing. Like, I don't get. I'd have to talk to my buddy Daniel, But I don't get a lot of his references, like about the whole block smelling like vapor rub. Like, is that something Dominicans do? Like, grease up with vapor rub all over the place?
I don't know.
I don't either. Like, this is all new. Like, oh, racist stereotypes I'm not even aware of.
I think she was just saying they were out of vapor rub in the commissary.
But that's mean something, though, right? That has got to be some kind of stereotype that we're not familiar with. Or else why would
they didn't say explicitly who was buying all the vapor rub.
No, but in context, it was the two Puerto Ricans bitching about the Dominicans, right? Because it seems like Dea and her mother are Puerto Ricans.
Right.
So, and then you've got the Mexican lady. It's like, it's, I thought that was some of the entertaining things, just them talking about. She goes, are you being racist? She goes, no, she's not racist. She's just saying racist things. Which
that was pretty funny.
Is and there's also a lot of interesting things, like some of the black women were of the opinion that they can't be racist. And was it Tasty that says, or was it Black Cindy that said, no, just because we don't have the power to affect their racism and round up white folk and put them in the ghettos, and doesn't mean that we are not capable of being racist, because this is America.
Right.
You know, it's like it's all in the game, yo. I have written cabins and dog dying. I don't know why.
Cabins and dog dying.
Yeah, there was no dog that died in this episode.
Literal dog dying. They went out, Caputo and the other guard guy went out to find Maureen, and he said, my father was a dog dyer, and he just dyes animals to look like other animals.
Yes, okay. All right. I now understand it. The other thing that happened in these early episodes is Judy King is a thing.
Judy King's here. She's got her own room, and
so she's like a Paula Deen plus Martha Stewart kind of blend.
Right.
Because it seems like her show is more of an aspirational living kind of thing. Like,
I thought her show was just like a Southern cooking bring on the butter type of thing. I thought the crime was a Martha Stewart. Yeah, but they talked about
having those like relaxation chambers, like different. So I kind of thought it was a little bit of a blend, because I don't know. That was just, and the fact that she's in there for like stock fraud,
okay.
Which is so it's like it's got the Paula Deen sensibility and character with the kind of ice queen, financial fraud, affluential aspiration kind of living thing of Martha Stewart.
Right.
But I like her character, and I like what she's doing to the inmates, because she is not asking for special treatment. In fact, it seems like in the first episode she was talking to her lover, her paramour. That, like, you know, I'm cool with whatever. And, like, I thought she was going to bunk up with the black women. And then when Caputo Healy came,
Pusey's
and, like, oh.
dream almost came true, but she couldn't speak out for herself.
Yeah, and she's the only. And that was a funny thing of her plot, which we'll get to here in a minute when we talk about her and So-So. But I like the fact, because I'm not sure how to feel about her, because she's not asking for these special privileges. This is the administration wanting to thread the needle between the public wanting to see her do hard time. And the fact that she is, even if she's not asking for it, if she says the wrong thing to the wrong person, they could all be in hot water.
She did specifically request a non-threatening white roommate.
Well, no, she didn't.
She didn't deny it later when she was accused of it.
Well, when Healy was, she said, well, if you're going to ask, I would like someone clean this, that. And so it's like, kind of her theme is like, I'll always accept this preferential treatment.
Right.
And that's interesting, and how Yoga Jones is kind of resisting being on the 1%.
What? Can she say no?
Probably not. I mean, maybe. I think she
can say no.
But that, do you think Judy's right, and at some level that she likes the fact that now she's got a somewhat private room with a person who's, you know, clean and friendly and is not going to get, you know.
Well, sure, but she's also a very principled woman.
She is.
Until she gets offered herbal tea.
She is. I also like the fact that they mentioned that they also sprinkle these like Freakonomic facts in here. Last year was when abortion became legal in the United States, like the crime in successive generations noticeably dropped off, because instead of women being forced to carry children to they don't want to term, and all the ensuing problems of that, you just have an entire generation of criminals who were never born. this, we're talking about the effects of lead paint, which is another Freakonomics. Like, that, there's like a lot of evidence that shows that when we crack down on lead in the environment and got that out of the drinking water, crime rates plummet because it inhibits children's like behavioral control and their ability to absorb new information. And it's also scary because guess what's in the news now? The fact that in many, many, many of our communities, we got lead in the water again.
Right.
Because a bunch of people took the eye off the fucking ball and this rake.
So we got a bunch more criminals coming?
It's possible. Like, we're cracking down on abortion and we're putting lead in the water in this country. So, yeehaw.
Who wins?
Privatized prisons.
Okay.
I think is the theme. But yeah. What else do we want to talk about? I guess we should talk about Pousset and Soso?
Yeah, just real quick while we're in between things.
Yeah.
I want to mention that Gloria is campaigning to get Sophia out of Max. Her guilt is really eating at her. So she let her son know to let Benny know.
Benny's her son, to let Michael know, to let his mom know that this is going on to Sophia.
So she shows up and she's been harassing Caputo. So.
Right. And that's the thing, is like, I don't see, I can't get a good handle on Caputo because he does seem like he tries to do the right thing, but this thing with Sophia, she's just being left to rot in the hole while he's trying on new suits.
Have we even seen her yet? No, we haven't.
No, we haven't.
In the first three episodes, no Sophia.
She's just mentioned the fact that she's still in the hole and she's been in there for at least 3 or 4 days, like we just, you know, talked about in the beginning of the podcast. So we're going to talk about Soso and Pousset.
Okay.
Which is interesting because I thought that they were a cute couple, and I feel like that I've always been annoyed by Soso. She doesn't feel like a real person to me.
She's still pretty frustrating and annoying.
That's the thing. Like, they've added this dimension to where she's such a people pleaser that she, you know, like, she had that revelatory experience with the person that's a sex offender. And, you know, I thought they're going to make it's like, you know, well, he... is like a statutory rape deal. He was 18. He was a senior in high school, and he had sex with this, you know, junior girlfriend.
Right.
And his parents pressed charge. It was worse than that. He was just having sex on an abandoned beach with his girlfriend, two consenting adults. Now he's a sex offender. And they were talking about, you know, they made a little point about how the sex offender registration, everyone, because it's for pedophiles and to make sure that women and children in the community are safe and are aware of the people that are sex offenders in the community. But because that is such a broad class of crime, which seems like it needs to be fixed legislatively, you've got people who peed in an alley outside of a bar that was 500 feet from a school playground, and now they're treated just like a person who pulled their pants down in front of children.
Right.
You got these people having sex in public, or if, like, you know, at 3 o'clock in the morning they're having sex in a park in their car.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the kind of people, and they're treated just like a child molester, which, that's a separate topic for discussion about, like, what, you know, what do we do as far as rehabilitating, helping these people? But man, that seems like a fucked up, shitty situation. I don't know.
Absolutely.
I don't know how you go on and live in your life in a free, just society when that stuff is happening to you. Because you're going to try, you got to knock on your neighbor's doors and tell them I'm a registered sex offender, no matter where you move to. Like, people aren't going to be get to, like, okay, well, tell me your story. Tell me your, it's going to be like, oh, thanks for letting me know. Slam, lock, slide chain. Like, they're, you know.
Right. You don't ask and you don't volunteer the story. So how do you ever know unless you get to know a person?
And how are you going to, are you going to get to know the guy who won't meet you? And that's the thing, is like, it's going to change your personality. Like, are you going to be smile at people? Are you going to meet their gaze? Or are you going to act like a whipped dog that society is treating you? But this is all to state that Soso, after having this experience, goes back to her, you know, they're, what, I forget exactly what cause. Oh, they're protesting a Walmart in the community.
Yeah.
And this guy's like, you want to put a park here. I can't live within, you know, a several block radius of a park. So you're essentially wanting me to sign this proposal to evict myself.
Right.
And he cynically says, well, it's not like Walmart's going to lose. So he signs it, but she comes bouncing back and giving this trumped up story so she can fit in and be accepted in this group.
Right.
And then she does the same thing where she makes up this outrageous stories about Pousset. And I thought,
and, you know, the thing about it is that I don't think she made it up so much as she just assumed that because she was black, that was the truth. And that's the universal experience for black women in jail.
Right. And that's the thing. Like, she's coming from this, you know, I mean, she's not white, she's Asian, but she's coming from this thing where she's so politically correct,
mm-hmm.
and she's so, like, you know, it's like, oh, I just watched The Wire and made assumptions. That's like, that stings a little bit, because I feel like that a lot of middle-class people can make that same statement. Like, they try to be aware and understanding about race, but it allows you to, you know, paint people with an overbroad brush. And now Poussey, who... Because that's when she was saying that, I'm like, wait, this isn't Poussey. Poussey's dad was in Germany, and he was, right. like, he was a military officer, and he right. probably made decent money, and she had yeah. structure and education, and she spoke multiple languages. Like, I was protesting as So-So is selling this shit to Miss King.
Yep. So, I mean, I think that's an important lesson for Judy King to learn or understand.
But
I
why? Mean,
clearly that spoke to her and appealed to her, because she ended up inviting Poussey to come sit at her table and talk with her.
But not because she's just a human being who's who's starstruck. It's like, oh, well, she just doesn't know how to act because she's black and poor and
right.
from a criminal element, et cetera, et cetera. So, like, I don't know what Judy King takes away from this experience, because she was just sold a bad bill of goods.
She didn't seem to be bothered by it.
Well, I wouldn't be either.
When Poussey was like, well, that's not my family. That's not the truth. And Judy King seems like, I don't know.
I'm just telling you what your girlfriend told me. So that's kind of how I would play it, too. It's like, oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry I made all these assumptions based on what your intimate partner told me about you.
Right. Didn't seem very upset that she was lied to, either.
Well, I don't think Judy cared one way or another. She was trying to be nice. It makes her look
like a privileged asshole. I mean, which she absolutely is. I'm just saying, like,
she's afraid of looking like that. I feel like she's very... I would be
when I'm in a prison and someone sells me the story about a black woman, just assuming that she's got this kind of background.
I wonder if they'll do anything, because maybe that'll make her a little bit less... I wonder if they're going to steer this to where she leans into the celebrity thing and, like, starts wanting more and more privileges, or if it's going to be that she kind of walks that line between... you know, being famous and being kind of pampered, but she never takes it too far. I don't really know where they're going with it, honestly. Not, this isn't a complaint. It's just me saying I could see what you're saying, but...
I think it's already been gone to there with, and the kitchen's being remodeled. I mean, the story already played itself out. That was a moment for So-So and Poussey to really fully understand. But I thought
you were asking
other.
A question about what is this going to do to King going forward, and I'm like,
no,
I
didn't ask that.
Oh, okay. Well, it's all recorded, so if you're a liar, I want a lot of people feedbacking and calling you out.
Okay.
What else do we want to talk about? What about can we talk about Healy's new look and this whole boss dog bullshit and his little necklace he's got going and his shirt that's unbuttoned, maybe a button too much.
Yeah,
and
he's always been that much of an asshole.
His stonewashed jeans. Like, can we talk about... different? He's acting a little cockier.
I don't think so.
I mean, yeah,
it's been exactly one day, so I don't really think a change has taken place.
You made the comment when we were watching it, like, look how disgusting he looks with his...
He's wearing more necklaces than I was aware he wore.
That's what I was trying to get at.
I don't think there was a change. I just noticed he was wearing more necklaces than I thought he wore.
Well, ever since he's agreed to give his Russian bride a separation, divorce, whatever, I can't exactly remember the details, it does seem like he's a bit more, and he had that flirtation with... Red, who, you know, she thought that they, I guess, had an understanding, but he's made it very clear that he doesn't, like, he's back to trying to punish her.
Yeah.
He's using his power and abuse thereof. And part of it is, like, this is shit rolling downhill, because he doesn't want to be given Judy King preferential treatment. He's got 80 new prisoners to process, and his role as guidance counselor and all that stuff, and getting them squared away.
Yeah.
And Caputo comes and says, I don't give a shit. This is the number one thing. I mean, he doesn't want that either, but, you know, it does seem like he's doing some of this stuff with Miss King to piss off Red and to take her down a peg. And
you think so?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Because Red says, like, I don't like this. And he says, well.
I mean, I was expecting if he was going to get back at Red directly, he would, you know, give her kitchen duty. She is a famous chef, after all.
Well, don't you think that's probably coming?
I thought that they were going to pair up Red and Judy in the same room. That would have been interesting.
Well, it's going to, because, like, man, I...
Yoga Jones, we happened to
freeze frame when they first met, when, like, Healy was giving her a tour of the garden, and Healy's doing that, well, maybe we should fertilize our women. Like, ugh. That is some genteel breeding that Judy King did immediately projectile vomit all over his shoes when he said that.
Yeah.
But I happened to freeze frame because you were getting up to refresh your drink or something, and the look that she was shooting at Red was like she had this smile plastered on her face, but her eyes were like dead serious. And I'm like, oh, they are really going to have some kind of face off this year.
This summer. Red and Judy King.
Red the Rampaging Russian Reznikov versus Judy the King King. I don't know. It seems like that would be the next evolution to just go ahead and put them, have them square off over the lunch arrangement.
She's taking over the garden, and it's gonna get crazy. Maybe life is all crazy, but at least you can get snacks.
Do you want to talk about Daya and her mom? Because I still think her mom is the worst.
Her mom is the worst.
She's led the situation where Caesar, she instead of having
a solid backup Mary plan Sternberger before you
take over,
Steenbergen,
whatever, and buy her a bunch of wood toy yuppie bullshit stuff, she swooped in there and made sure she was put with her people. Caesar immediately got arrested, and now he's going away for it seemed like a long time on his conspiracy charge.
Long time.
And now they're working with caseworkers, and they got strangers, and their kid is who knows where. And once again, Daya has to comfort her own goddamn mother and pull her out of her spiral. Daya's the one who was wronged and needs comfort, but she is now being the mother to her own mother.
Yeah.
And finding her sobbing at night. I'm just let her cry. Because the cynical part of me says that she's also crying really loudly at night, hoping that Daya will creep over and be like, Mom, what's wrong? No.
Oh, yeah. I definitely feel that way, too.
It's like, get the fuck out.
Do you think that we're going to see Mary Steenburgen again? Is she going to call her back and say, listen, my mom fucked me.
Well, here's the thing. Like, I don't know how to feel about that either, because that shit looked like it was really broken and weird between her and Pornstache. Like, there's not a really great place for Daya Jr. to go, in my opinion. This is all a train wreck. At one point, she's almost this close to getting stomped on by SWAT team. On this other side, she might be raised by a psycho rapist and his crazy mother. Like, I don't feel like there's a good solution to this problem.
Here's a solution. They bring back the actual father.
Huh? Okay.
Huh?
Okay.
He comes back just as suddenly as Bennett? He disappeared.
Wait, what is his name?
Bennett, I think.
The soldier.
Who?
We never really got the entire story to him. Never got any
sort of closure.
Yeah.
Or understanding. Maybe I should research it on the internet.
So well, I thought that the actor wanted out, and that's why they wrote him out. It wasn't like a creative decision, so.
Okay.
Who knows? That one, Allison Williams' boyfriend memorably came back on Girls this season after a similar falling out creatively, so who knows? Maybe he will come back.
Yeah. That was just a one episode thing. He's not back.
Oh, really?
So, I mean, if we get a one off episode where we get some closure, then sure.
That might be nice. Let's see. What else we want to talk about?
Red's got a snoring problem that she's dealt with.
A woman with an abnormally large uvula. I love, because it's funny, there's nothing, I felt like there's this just really strange synchronicity, because as I was saying, like, wait a second, this isn't Pusey's backstory, that immediately became relevant, and I was also saying, I don't know why they don't try sewing a pouch on the back of their shirt and putting a tennis ball in there, because that's what my mom tried to do with my dad, because my dad is a inhuman snorer.
Right.
Like, when I have to share, every once in a while, like when we go on a long motorcycle trip or any time that I'm forced to spend the night in the same accommodation as my dad, it's a desperate race to get to sleep before him.
Yeah.
Because it's just earth-shattering, sleep apnea, worst of the worst kind of snoring you can get.
Yeah.
But in this case, like, they did that, and it seemed to work, except for now the woman's got, like, facial fractures and maybe some teeth missing because she rolled out of the bug, hit the
she's
ground.
She's broke her nose.
And I like how Red's like, I should probably go with you to her. But,
She got her sleep that night many nights after.
And the other thing about Red is that she is subtly undermining Piper's power.
No, I think she was just fucking with her that one time.
I think she's also trying to get back to being the boss bitch in the prison, too.
I don't think there's any argument between the two who is.
I know, but I mean, the fact that she was saying, you've got to be tough and you can't show any weakness, and then people come into their bunk, and right away, Red undermines, like, Piper's like, you can't be in. I get the bot.
Yeah, I get what you're saying, but I think that Piper is a very, very minor threat that she just likes to play with.
Yeah.
Where Judy is really her focus.
Okay, I guess you're right that Red never took her seriously. She's more like just, it's not undermining her power. Right. She's just fucking
like
with
when
her.
She was giving her advice on how to seem tougher, she says, I have to have Mystique, and that's what you do. And she says, no, there's yes. no question that I have power.
I could break you, yeah.
yeah.
And she also has a lot of really good, like, I forget exactly, like, are you, someone asked her something about how dangerous she is. It's like, ask the Germans in wintertime. like, all these, like, World War II, that's, again, her building this Iron Curtain yes. mystique around her.
Yes.
I love it. We talked about this a little bit in passing, Black Cindy and her turf war with the
Muslim lady, yeah.
Which feels kind of like a Gaza Strip type of situation, where they're literally fighting over demarcations and lines and who yeah. controls what, and there's a lot of political commentary that I'm not qualified to commentate on that. But yep. like, where do you? So, what is like? Is that supposed to be funny? Is that going to be like another piece of social consciousness coming through? Like, I can't quite tell. Also, I guess I like Black Cindy, and I thought her conversion to Judaism was genuine.
Right, they
didn't really ground her that much, though, it seems like.
No, these two are not taking each other seriously. I don't know, maybe they'll have some sort of alliance by the end.
Yeah, it seems like this is the show's style, that they're going to
maybe
they're gonna
Black
do some...
Cindy will convert to a new religion by the end of the season. Who knows?
yeah, it's like, oh, Islam is just Judaism fulfilled. So, yeah, I can see some. But it does seem like in this show's wheelhouse to have them squabble and then eventually form an alliance against a larger threat, or just, you know,
right, instead of bonding over the fact that you are singularities,
yes.
you're minorities that yes. are of a persecuted religion for the most part. Instead of finding that common ground, that's another reason to fight the person you're stuck in the situation with.
So shall we talk about Maria Ruiz's backstory? Who she is primarily to this point been the woman who has the adorable boyfriend who is kind of mute, and the adorable
baby
who was born in the first season and taken away from her, and that's kind of like all I know about her character. And this is now the season where she's getting her storyline fleshed out.
Yeah.
That her father was like a race first Dominican and ran mm-hmm. like this minor street drug gang and was all about, you know, propping them up with the racial identity. And we see some teenage Maria and how her father was kind of a creep,
yes,
around, and inappropriate around her friends, and also saying, you know, doing all this stuff for our people, but also it seems like it's pretty cynical about lining his pockets, and, you know, the fact that he hates Mexicans and doesn't like them encroaching on his property, and then there's this, like, a West Side Story where she falls in love with I mean, she doesn't fall in love. She's just, like, looking out. She sees this guy running down the street who throws his packet of drugs, and she goes and scoops it up and
yeah.
saves it for him. And then there's this, I thought, really cute scene where she goes to meet him at his boxing gym, and she's trying to spar with him, and she ends up slapping him full in the face.
Yes.
And he was super pissed, but he could tell that she's so shocked.
But he was also very charmed by it.
Yeah, she's like, I thought you were a boxer. You could block that. And then, you know, she's kind of a motor mouth, and he's kind of in, but
he's not a talker.
But he talked about, like, why that is, and, like, I feel like other than the fact that they're both kind of drug dealers now, that's a pretty cute relationship.
Yeah, just adorable. Love them.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't remember, last season he said, I can't come and visit you anymore. Their daughter's getting older, and it's getting confusing for her,
mm-hmm.
which tells me that Maria's going to be in jail for, she's got a while left. Because he wouldn't just stop coming to visit if she had maybe a year left,
mm-hmm.
right? He's trying to make a normal life for his daughter without having to visit his mom and her mom in prison.
Mm-hmm.
So that was just heartbreaking. Their visit scenes were always some of my favorite.
Sure. Especially when she's saying, like, before she thought she's going to be put away into a remote prison.
Yeah.
Like out-of-state prison, she's like, you've got to talk to this baby. If you don't talk to babies, they grow up weird. And the next visit, you see that he's actually talking and, like, doing all this other stuff and, like, yeah. really trying to be a good dad. I wonder if this is going to... Because here's the thing. this is exactly why he didn't want the daughter to know his mother, her mother, because she doesn't, he doesn't want her to have these same kind of things. And now it seems like Maria is fully kind of leaning into the El Jefe lifestyle.
Yeah.
Is this a, like a self-fulfilling prophecy where he's going to have some bad feelings and wanting to get back, you know, maybe bring the daughter back around, but then she's going to get busted and put in solitary. And he's like, oh, no, I can't. I wonder where this is going. I mean, it's interesting just her being kind of Walter Whiting the prison.
Right. I don't think that he's going to have much of a storyline in the future. I think that it's much more interesting to have her become, you know, just a fully fulfilled bad person on the inside.
Yeah, and it's getting to know the relationship and how things are probably going to go wrong up front is nice. Because I like the guy as the actor. Like, his eyes are amazing. Mm-hmm. He's got these big, giant Elijah Wood-esque pools in his face for eyes. And they're super expressive, which is good since he's playing a character who doesn't talk much.
Right.
But I missed having him. Like, the, you know, these people were solid C to D class tier characters, and now they're moving into the A-list.
Right.
So I like it. I mean, that's the other thing about Maria is that we get her backstory that she wanted to be a dental hygienist because that seemed like very white collar and she likes to help people with their smile. And, you know, he's got plans too, but his plans clearly are probably more along the Scarface line. And this goes to show, like, the flip side of the so-so Pousse thing is that this is what happens to a lot of people. They had then no one plans, like, I'm going to be a criminal like my dad. But things go wrong, and you got so much opportunity to associate with that element, and that does seem like a good way to get ahead, and there aren't a lot of opportunities, and that's how you get a girl who's clearly smart and, you know, confident and thinks on her feet, and she ends up getting sucked into this lifestyle. Interesting.
I wonder if we're going to see any more of that, or... You know, we've gotten backstories before where we don't actually find out how they ended up in prison. Just get a flash of their backstory establish
their character. Yeah. I do wonder if we're going to get the moment of where, like, you know, the cuffs get slapped on her.
I don't know.
Because you're right, we're like 50-50 about the backstories.
I mean, if they don't, then the implication is there. It was drug-related.
Yeah.
It wasn't nearly as interesting as giving someone fake tabs and making them think that they're on acid and killing themselves.
Another plot line we can talk about is Pennsylvania Doggett.
Yes.
And the rapist who got his face smashed in the car accident last year, and the fact that he's with Flacca's friend, who I call Marzipan. I know that's not a real name, but...
It's Marisol.
Marisol, thank you. It's like crosswired in my brain now, and I promise it's not because I'm trying to talk shit about her character. It's just like after you listen to a few of my podcasts, you'll get the fact that I just can't keep the shit straight. Marisol,
sure.
What is going? So the other thing I thought was gross about this is this CO who I can't remember, the donut duck guy, the rapist. He is talking to the other CO and talking about Doggett as if she is her girlfriend on the outside.
Yeah.
So that, you know, obviously you can't date prisoners,
right?
Because prisoners can't, as Red reminded Healy, they can't give consent to relationships. I thought that was gross too, that he's like acting like this is getting relationship advice to how he can woo the girl he raped back, and like, why is she treating me like this? And total lack of self-awareness. What's the deal? Why hasn't he tried anything with Marisol? Is she just a little bit more street smart, or
no? I think it's just he was genuinely attracted.
He's
to
fixated
Doggett.
To Doggett.
Exactly.
Wants,
exactly. Okay. I think he's has this possessive thing with her now.
And it's pretty tragic because Doggett came up to the two girls and tried to give them a warning, and I thought they were making fun of her, but I think that they genuinely
I think it was both things.
Was it? Or are they just completely insensitive about showing...
They were making fun of her, but then just acting like she's a pathetic person, which has some sort of sympathy implied, right? But still, they're making fun of her because they're those kinds of girls.
But I thought that was super, where she's like, you like ducks? And Dog is like, not anymore.
I wish that Doggett would just come out and say it.
Yeah.
But, you know, at the same... Yeah, she deserves warning.
Yeah, she does, but it's also...
But she got out of her that it hadn't happened to her, at least not yet.
Yeah, and that's like, it's on, they're like, her and Big Boo are on like rape watch. Yeah. Because at one point, like, Marisol is like sobbing, but you find out that that's just, she's just affecting, and that's just her and Flocka doing their bullshit.
Yeah.
And they're like, that fucking asshole. And then it's like, oh, I guess it never happened. And like, Dogga points out, well, he's still a fucking asshole.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what they're going to do. What they need to do is inform somebody that's got power to do something about it.
Yes.
And hopefully that this won't be buried by Caputo the way he did Bennett and Daya's relationship.
Well, I mean, yes, that's true. But the actual rapist, Pornstash, was... Well, I guess they're all actual rapists.
Uh-huh.
But Pornstash did get the full brunt of the penalty of the law.
Yeah.
He got the book thrown at him, so... I can only assume that Caputo would try to bury it somehow or make it go away.
Yeah.
Because he's the new warden now, so we can't have women escaping and all this crazy shit happening in his prison that he just took control of. Then it makes him seem like he's not good at his job or he's incompetent at his job.
Yeah. Also, it's you know, we're early on in the season, but like in this second episode, Tasty finds kind of like... the club fed that's going on with Judy King, and she's kind of like staring open jawed. So like,
it's gonna
a
get
matter of
soon.
Time
it's
before be... the general population finds out what kind of preferential treatment she and Yoga Jones are getting, and
I'm
what's that gonna
it's
do?
Taken that long because they've got the door wide open all the time. You can always see all the women streaming past. It's right out, and the door is open in front of a bathroom, which has to be used by a great many people.
Yeah,
too many.
I also like Tasty's, like, in her last moments of being a housekeeper, like, she's trying to mop, and she's like, how are you supposed to mop when there's nonstop bitches tracking through? And she, like, stared down the one, she'd closed the bathroom, and the girls are gonna, like, walk across the sign, and she's like, really? Really?
Yeah.
And backs her down, and the next episode, there's, like, half a dozen women walking past them, and Suzanne's got some choice things, too. She's like, she compares their fate to Sisyphus, also in Black Cindy... the Muslim woman set up the Diet Coke trap that exploded, and Suzanne's like, oh, we could sleuth up the true owner and restore and restore people's faith and humanity. And then when it blows up in Black Cindy's, Suzanne's like, we could have been sleuthing. So funny.
Yeah.
So anyway, we're rounding into the third episode. I'm not sure, we probably... talked about most of this stuff.
I feel
already.
Like we covered pretty much all of it. I've got some feedbacks in case we didn't.
Sure. Let's talk about that then.
Okay.
Oh, I do want to say about Tasty's description of her. She goes, if George Martin wrote about prisons, I'd be the hand of the warden. Winter's coming, bitches. I like
that. Yeah, there's some great lines, as usual.
Also, like, what can we do to help... Sophia and Benny says, well, they've got Michael's got a Kickstarter campaign, and she's like, what's that mean? He's like, nah, not a lot usually. That was pretty funny. All right, anyway, yeah, you want to talk about feedback and we can see what's going on here?
Sure. The first one is from Nathan. He says, I love that Piper's trying to be gangsta with an A, and everyone else is like, who are you? You aren't shit. Do you agree with that? I don't think I agree with that. I think there are some people who are giving her some respect.
Again, the minimum security women, I think, were about to figure that Piper is...
Well, her Samoan bodyguard, at the very least, is on the you aren't shit bandwagon, but still hangs out with her anyway.
Yeah, but that's like, that's the thing. Like, yeah, that was going... That reminded me a lot of... in the Get Shorty, how the one guy... I forget the guy's name, but he had... Tony Soprano. What's that guy's name?
Oh, James Gandolfini.
James Gandolfini was his heavy, but he's just a past his prime stunt guy.
Yeah.
And, like, John Travolta was able... Anyway, she's a fake heavy. Doesn't seem like she respects Piper. Not super tough.
I do like Piper and the Samoan lady's rapport.
Yeah.
Like when they're talking about sunflower seeds.
Right.
You bought Ovaltine, you reap what you sow.
But then Piper's trying to buy people because she doesn't have money because the kangaroo lady stole it all from her.
Yep.
So she's trying to buy people's loyalty with Ovaltine. Like, Piper's already and she's already disappointed when we start the episodes that everyone was at the lake and not basking in like what a badass she was. Yeah. Like most people just kind of missed this whole drama that was happening.
Right.
But anyway, let's get back to Nathan's email.
Alex is slowly redeeming herself the further away she gets from Piper. I don't know about redeeming herself. She's certainly murdering 100% more people than she was before.
Okay, it's not murder. It's legit self-defense.
At first. Later when you smother the guy who can't attack you anymore, that's murder.
I'm still going to call it an accessory to self-defense. Light murder. It's light murder.
Sure, it could have been self-defense when she had the bruises on her neck from being strangled if they had called someone in to help them immediately. Why?
That's the thing. Like, if his status as a fake security guard was, or corrections officer, if I knew for a fact what the fuck the story was on that. But the thing is Alex had no way of knowing whether he was there legit or whether he was there because he snuck in and taking advantage of the chaos. It's like I don't think it's obvious of what would happen if she says, this guy attacked me and we scuffled and Lolly had to kill him.
This guy started a couple days ago, if that, and he tried to kill me. And I have the bruises around my neck. Someone walked in and found me and saved me.
I'm not sure that you can bet the system would side with her. I mean, that's just my analysis of how Alex would feel about it. I don't know what actually would happen, but you get caught up in the system. I think it changes your opinion and what you feel about how justice works and all that stuff.
Okay. Brooke, that's so-so, can go from being the most annoying and privileged character to the best thing ever in one scene. The boombox moment was great.
Yeah.
Say anything.
I also liked her not knowing how to take Judy King, because Judy King's joking with her and she didn't laugh. And she's like, oh, I found that there's many people in here who are funny without meaning to be, so I suppress my mirth.
He continues that Morello visitation was hot. Was expecting Gloria to have an I'll have what she's having moment one table over. And she would have if her son weren't there.
Sure.
This next one's from Amy Jaw 89. Thought I would hate Judy King, but so far she's been a really interesting character, a refreshing addition to the dynamic.
I like her a lot.
I do hate her.
No. Wow. I do. Okay. Well, that's something we can fight about in a couple episodes.
The way she smiles, not a fan. I'm enjoying Piper much more so far because her annoying nature is so much more tongue-in-cheek from the writers, and her new cellmate Muscle is great too.
Judy King is like, if you take her story at face value, she came from nothing and built herself into something, which makes her seem like she's a hell of a lot less entitled than you'd expect from a person of her wealth and background. Like, she seems a lot more grounded than your average, rich person being thrown into prison kind of situation.
Yeah. A few little seeds were planted early on about the backstories for both Crazy Eyes. We didn't get the full story in previous episodes, did we? And her even crazier girlfriend, with Caputo looking at her file and being surprised by something. Hope they expound on both.
We never find out why she's in prison, but Susan alluded to the fact that she did hurt someone, and we've seen I don't think it was anything out of malice. I think it was born of her poor impulse control.
I think Maureen's got some of the same going on. Maybe a killed her family situation is what I'm laying my money at.
Could be, because she got pretty scary towards the end in that pretend land.
Yeah.
She was,
She did. She continues, I'm also worried about Pensatucky. She seems quite rightly like a completely different person since her experience with the rapist guard. It was kind of painful to watch her show care for Marisol, who took her only job only to be shot down.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we talked about that. Dances with Wookiees says, well, I have found Piper to be just awful so far this season. At least she's only in about 10% of the story this season.
And again,
season.
I feel like she's more acceptable because it seems like they're setting her up for comeuppance.
Yes.
And I will deal with 10% of Piper if it's going to have her end up being schooled.
Exactly.
And how kind of annoying and insignificant she is.
My favorite thing is that new huge prison guard. Is that the same guy who plays the mountain?
No, God, no.
Well, if they need to recast him yet again.
He'd be a decent mountain.
That scene where he is talking to the new prison guards in front of the cabin and begins to break the ice was hilarious. That guy is so fucking intimidating.
Yeah, we didn't talk about how the other thing, the Caputo's brilliant idea, and we didn't talk about the relationship he has with this executive. Do you think... I can't tell whether they're on the same page about their relationship.
Oh, I think they absolutely are.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. They're enjoying each other's company.
Well, yeah,
right
but
now.
I think he's reading into it a little bit. I mean, the way... Because she keeps on saying us, and but like us is in the sense of the team, and let's discuss our wins, where he's like talking us as in relationship.
No. I think you've got that backwards.
Yeah,
I think she's
could
saying
be wrong.
Us is us.
I have a hard time telling when people are flirting with me, etc. So, yeah. I forgot why I even mentioned that. Oh, because that's the other thing we didn't talk about Caputo with the cabins. The fact that they found these old cabins and that jogged his memory and... They're able to clean them up for the COs because that's a soft benefit they're able to give without actually in lieu of salary.
Yeah.
So everything's been done in a cheap here.
By the way, when So-So is at the sex offender's house and he hands her the newspaper, you should pause it and read the article. It's pretty funny.
Really?
Did you do that?
No, hell no.
I missed it.
I'm critically low on time with this stuff because I'm still doing Penny Dreadful for one more week and Game of Thrones is still in full swing. So
no time for pauses, no rewinds,
just shotgun it, man. Off the cuff, pew pew.
He continues, but can someone tell me why no one has reported the missing prison guard? Why are they not looking for him? Could someone please help me understand this? Wouldn't Alex's former drug boss expect to see him again? I think we fought
that,
about that.
Definitely. And that, I feel like that's... I don't understand whether he bullshitted his way with fake ID and a uniform onto the campus, or he... Because it seemed like that he just got hired. And he made a comment about, like, how shit their screening process was.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
but
I,
he could, that
I
could
feel
have
like...
just been, that could have just been shit he was saying to Alex's, you know, cold-blooded smack before he killed her, too.
No, they accidentally released the wrong prisoner.
Yes, that's
last
also
season.
True.
I think that, yes, they're just bad at things.
But, I mean, do they have paperwork on this guy?
Or they're just so desperate for COs that they just took that guy.
Yeah,
a
guy in blue pants and a blue shirt shows up.
Looks muscular and serious.
Yeah. Yeah, I would like to know exactly how the circumstances of his hiring, because they might not even be, he might not be on a record, so they don't know he's missing, so they're not going to ever look for him.
Yeah. Michelle says, Lori Petty is such a talented actress. There is so much physical acting with the Lolly character, and she pulls it off so effortlessly and convincingly.
Those glasses are a big help.
Right.
Like, those glasses really give her that unhinged Dr. Seuss quality that the character needs.
She says, liking the Red and Judy interaction. Judy, being a new inmate, should be intimidated by Red, but stood up to her like a boss.
Yeah.
You know who is irritating me? Morello. By the way, just exactly how young is this dude she married? I don't think he's that young. I think he's just living with his parents, which you can do forever.
Yeah,
if they and you so choose.
I kind of thought he was in his early 30s, and now when I see him in this season, he does look a lot younger.
I think he might be in his early 30s.
He might be in his early 20s.
Here's why I think so. It's because he had a faint poster above his bed. I and my brother, who is 30, are big Faint fans, and their heyday was a while ago. So that's my thing.
Uh-huh.
Also, I'm just a very terribly desperate person. really feeling horrible for Pensatucky. It's heartbreaking to watch her slowly crumble, hoping that guard can't remember his name. Neither can I. Nobody can. Who cares? He's the rapist.
Yeah, he's the rapist.
I hope he gets what's coming to him. And she finishes by saying, I'm not a fan of Piscadella. No reasons. She's putting it out there.
I like Piscatella until he does something.
Twist a knife.
Until he does something that I'm sure is going to shock and offend me. But right now, I feel like he's making the best out of a bad situation.
Well, here's the thing. I, due to the fact that I watch more TV than I think is really healthy or normal, I recognize small bit characters or people, actors who have played small parts in other things. So when I see, like, when I see a group of inmates walk in and they're all standing there waiting for bunk assignments, I scan the room for faces and I can point out who's probably going to have a bigger scene or part later. When they were doing the break the ice scene, I think that I figured out someone else who's going to be a bigger part.
Who?
And he's just some blonde dude.
Oh, okay.
But
I thought it was just going somewhere with Piscatelli. And
I mean, when you have this group of guards together, I think that there's going to be another male guard in that group who might serve as some sort of Piscatella foil. I don't know. I like Piscatella being a good guard.
Okay.
Maybe he's an asshole. Maybe he shoves Norma. But, I mean, just actually being good.
He's the anti-porn stash. He's like, he knows his codes. He knows his books. But he's also, he knows how to de-escalate and when's the proper escalation. And
exactly.
He doesn't need to compensate for anything because he is this big, giant slab of a man. Yeah. I'm digging him so far.
He gets to be the same tough badass, but, you know, with less people giving him a guff back about it.
I want to see his backstory. I also love the fact that how the Litchfield guys getting sued up in their riot gear, and then like the real riot police coming in for a Max.
Yes.
And like how badass they were.
Yeah.
That was cool. But yeah, I'd like to see Piscatelli's. Is it Piscatelli?
Piscatella.
Piscatella's.
With an S.
Piscatella's.
Piscatella. No. It's Piscatella. Piscatella's?
Yeah, it's Piscatella's now.
Piscatella.
I want to see his backstory. Because I bet there's something good about that, too. Like Caputo, remember, with his wrestling career and him supporting
his beer can.
Anyway.
Yes, that might be interesting. Or at least seeing his home life. Is he married? Does he have...
What is his deal?
Does he have pugs? I bet he has pugs.
Mm. All right.
That's all I've got.
Okay. So that is a perfectly cromulent first episode. We'll be back in a few days with episodes 4, 5, and 6.
Another perfectly cromulent one.
Not sure if it's going to be Pialani on that one or Cecily again, but we will figure it out. And we will post it on the baldmove.com website. Of this, I'm certain it'll be in MPEG Level 3 format for your listening enjoyment.
Yep, I have threads going on the Facebooks or the forums.baldmove.com for all the episodes.
Yeah, so you can follow at your own pace.
Yeah, each thread is for the 3-episode chunks that we'll be podcasting about. And put your feedbacks there, or you can email us
at orange@baldmove.com. And also, I do know that we're doing these in groups of three, and we're trying to do 2 a week. So we should be done in about 2.5 weeks.
Yes.
And the reason we're doing this is I think Jim and I have rounded into this after all of our coverage of
Daredevil, House of Cards.
Like, this seems like the fan consistent best way to do these.
To consume.
Yeah, the consume Netflix style content. It gets it out faster, and it's, you know, it's kind of how people, they binge in groups of three. And
yeah, so it's a binge.
It's a compromise between full coverage and half-assed podcasts and the way people watch it. So
yeah.
I hope it's not too disappointing and we're not doing episode-by-episode coverage.
Yeah.
All right, so we'll be back in a couple days. Send in your feedback and hope you're enjoying a new season. We'll see you soon.
Great to see you again. I'm Cecily.
I'm Aaron. Bye-bye.